I'm your host, Juliet, and I'm here with my co-host, Teresa.
Hi.
And you're listening to Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a podcast dedicated to discovering the minds behind health, rehabilitation, and neuroscience researchers. So sit back, relax, and please, mind the gap. So today's episode is going to be about mine and Teresa's personal experiences with research. Thank you, Teresa, for the episode idea. So basically, this is going to be a two-part podcast series of episodes where first we're going to do an episode on what we think are the positives of going into a research-based career and reasons why we chose to pursue research. And then the second episode is going to be more on the negatives, the cons of a research-based career, or maybe some reasons why traditionally people choose to not pursue a research-based career. So before we start, we have our first date question segment. So Teresa, I'm going to ask you some first date questions.
Okay.
So firstly, under what circumstances would you accept and eat an egg from a stranger?
Well, Juliet, I am not the biggest fan of eggs in general. So whether it was a stranger or not, I wouldn't openly accept it. There'd have to be something in it for me. I'd probably have to know where this egg is coming from, how it was cooked, how old it is, you know, all the public health standards.
Yeah.
I'd probably... If I knew it was for some sort of like show or I don't know, like someone's YouTube channel and they weren't just like a weird person off the street giving me an egg for no reason, then I'd probably eat it if they gave me like $5,000.
Okay. $5,000 is the limit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If anyone's out there.
And you want to give me $5,000, not a penny short.
Yeah. So I've had some strange amount of time to reflect on this question, and now I have a prepared answer for it.
Oh,
so
okay.
Originally, my response was I would never accept an egg and eat it from a stranger because the likelihood of me interacting with a stranger is really low. Because like whenever someone's on the street or even at like a store, like a retail store, and like they try to talk to me, I'm like, please, please don't talk to me. I get so awkward. I'm even awkward on the phone to like if I need to call to make a takeout order or if I need to call to make an appointment or like things like that. Like I don't do well with talking to strangers in that context. But then I was thinking, well, if I go out for breakfast, the person who is giving me an egg is a stranger.
Mm.
So the circumstances for me would be I would need to be out for breakfast. And it would need to be a server who's giving me the egg and I would eat it.
Wow, so that you definitely thought that through.
Yeah, I did. I mean, the nice thing about this question is you get to choose the circumstances.
That is true,
so,
yeah.
I mean, in your case, Teresa, you gain $5,000.
Yeah.
In my case, I get
you
breakfast.
Got what you ordered.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if I had a choice about how I would like my egg, I mean, just I like all forms of eggs, to be honest. All right, so the second question that I have for you is, what job did you want as a kid?
I think I mentioned this in a previous episode that I wanted to be a marine biologist until my uncle shot that down by telling me I would only meet geeks. And I was like, oh, that sounds bad. And I think I also at one point wanted to be – I remember having a babysitter who told me because – her rationale was because I had curly hair, I should be – a ballerina and hand out lollipops.
Oh, yes.
So I was like, yes, I think that's a good idea too.
Yeah. As someone who did ballet as a kid, I think that would be a great career. But competitive, surprisingly yeah. competitive yeah. to be and a ballerina.
I'm not sure how many lollipops I'd have to sell in order to like pay rent, but yeah. I think it'd be a lot.
It'd be a lot of lollipops. I don't know with inflation how much lollipops cost these days. It's been a while since I've gotten one. Well, for me, the job that I wanted as a kid, I mean, when I was like really little, I had stuffed animals and really wanted to be a vet as well.
Yeah.
But the job that like is most prominent in my mind is I wanted to be famous. So, I mean, I couldn't really tell you exactly what kind of fame. I think I wanted to be simultaneously both an actor and a singer. And I went to this art school that had weekly talent shows.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not even kidding. Weekly. And I would almost sign up like every week to sing a different Kelly Clarkson song in front of just like a massive audience. I'm not really sure why they like continued to let me get up there and sing Kelly Clarkson, but you know, it was entertaining for me. I think only for me.
Only for you.
But yeah, I wanted to be famous until about grade 10 when I first watched Grey's Anatomy. Mm. And then I decided I wanted to be a surgeon. So yeah, and now I definitely don't want to be famous. That's no longer the only type of fame I will accept at this point is winning a Nobel Prize. Mm. Although I don't think that's
yeah, I'm not sure how famous that would make you.
It would make me yeah,
famous in a certain circle.
I don't know if that will ever happen in my lifetime, but I think that's the only type of fame that I could see myself accepting. Yeah. It's something about like, I think we've chatted about this before, Teresa, but just like me and social media, we're not friends. Yeah. You know,
yeah, something about I just know like me, I would not be able to handle everyone knowing who I am as I'm walking down the street.
No, there's a lot of things that it come, sorry, that's not, I didn't word that very great, but like there's a lot of things that are great to just keep private. Yes. You know? Yeah, being able to just go out in the world and do your thing without being recognized, fantastic. Being able to wake up in the morning and not be met by like a million sort of social media notifications, yeah, also fantastic.
Yes.
So, yeah, and I wouldn't want to be famous. That's a big no for me. All right. So let's get into the episode. So as I mentioned at the beginning, we are going to be talking about the reasons why we decided to pursue research and maybe some reasons why you might consider also pursuing research. So Teresa, I'll let you start this one. Take it away.
Thank you, Juliet. Yeah. Well, I think something that I would say Juliet and I both agree with, and I would assume majority of especially research students would agree with, is that your schedule is very flexible and very much up to you, especially mm-hmm. after you finish all your courses. It's up to you to decide how you're going to book your time and when you're going to work. So whether you're a morning person or an evening person, you can really build your day around that, and which I find is very nice.
Mm-hmm. This is a big point for me. I think this is probably the most big reason that I really, really like research. And it was very obvious to me when I did my first research-based job over the summer. It was a NSERC undergraduate student research award, and it was so nice. It's like, oh, I want to do yoga right now, and then I would do yoga. Like, yeah, I didn't have to really attend to anything except for maybe like one weekly meeting.
Yeah.
Which I know it's not true when you get to the level of maybe a principal investigator. I'm sure you're a lot more busy with meetings that,
as
maybe
we learned from Janet's episode.
yeah and maybe that takes up, you know, like mornings and afternoons and stuff. But at least at a master's and PhD level, like you said, if you work better in the evenings, you can take the mornings off. Or yeah, if you want to go out one night and stay out super late, you can take the morning off without having any negative repercussions, basically. And you can make up time anywhere. I think the one thing is, it's like, we don't necessarily get paid hourly. Mm-hmm. So I guess the result of having such a flexible schedule is we can either underwork or more likely do a lot more work. But I think people who tend to strive for research-based jobs, they don't really look to just complete something. They look to just, like, I feel like we're all working on projects that we're super passionate about. So
yeah, and we want to be working towards whatever the end goal of the project is, or, you know, whether it's answering a question or just completing our thesis.
Yeah. And I would say, even though maybe we work, like, I don't know about you, Teresa, but I don't keep track of the hours that I work.
No, I don't either.
Maybe some people are very particular about doing so, and it's flexible enough that you can do that. You can make sure you're only working 40 hours. But that being said, I would say that I find it's better or easier for me to find a work-life balance, because I'm not forced into a 9-to-5 day where by the end of the day I'm extremely exhausted.
Yes.
And, like, all I have left for the rest of the day is, like, chores. And then, you know, you find it hard to make dentist appointments and, like, all these things. Having that flexibility makes it really easy. And I find that I can prioritize the life part of the work-life balance. You know, I can say, on these days, I want to take 3 hours off to go rock climbing. On the weekends, I want to go rock climbing, you know.
And Juliet really likes rock climbing.
I'm really in a rock climbing phase right now. But because I just have flexibility with my schedule, I can choose that. If it's like, oh, you know, maybe a Friday morning rock climb, maybe a Thursday afternoon rock climb, maybe a Saturday, you know, it's like, I can really choose whatever time.
Yeah.
So do you ever find any difficulties with having such a flexible schedule?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes things can get kind of pushed to the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you really have to prioritize what you need to get done in that week. And I find I am someone – I never even thought about this till now. I don't really – I have an idea, and maybe it's just because, like, my working memory is good, but I don't schedule out what I'm doing in a day or even a week. I just kind of know what has to be done.
Yeah.
And then I show up and do it.
Yeah.
So,
I think you and I are very similar like that. I think in my undergrad, when there was a lot of, like, assignment deadlines and stuff, that's when I was really good at writing things down, especially during COVID when, you know, there wasn't any, like, reminders in person. Like, you couldn't have your friend tell you, like, oh, did you finish that assignment?
Right.
You know? So it's like I felt very responsible for handing things in during that time. But now, yeah, I don't know if it's just my working memory, but I don't even make a grocery list. So I do like to write things down and cross them off. If I do get really busy, I just like the satisfaction.
Satisfying, yes.
Yeah, crossing things off. But, yeah, and I do think that – especially when beginning a research-based position, it can take a bit of time to find a routine, which can be really difficult. Like, I like the flexibility and the newness of every day, but, like, I do think that routine really helps you stay productive. So,
and sometimes it's hard going – I feel like you probably feel this. I felt this when I started my master's, kind of – getting into the groove of, oh, I really am in control of what I'm doing and not being so reliant on what's happening around you, and having the confidence to be like, I need to do this and I'm going to do this whether someone's telling me to or not.
Yeah, it definitely takes some discipline. I would say you can be any type of learner, like someone who does things last minute to be successful in research. I don't think you have to be – I don't think it's a one-size
– No, yeah.
You know, like it's – I think you can – be a really, you know, proactive person, or you can be a very last minute person. It can still work for you. But I do think that if you're a very last minute person, having, like, no deadlines and, like, having no sort of specific guidance from your supervisor about what you should be doing on a daily basis can make having a flexible schedule kind of difficult and maybe can prolong your degree, especially if you're spending all of your time, you know, doing hobbies instead of work, which does happen. So it does take some sort of, I guess, productivity and, like, planning,
like, accountability.
And stuff. Yeah, accountability. That's a good word. Just to be successful in a research-based job. So my, I guess, second most, I don't know, we're not really ordering this, but the next one that really stands out for me and why I really like a research-based job is the opportunities that come with it. So it's like, not only do we have a flexible schedule, but we get to choose what we do with our time. And we can choose to apply to conferences where we get to present our research and meet other like-minded people. We can get into science communication, like doing this podcast. Or, you know, one of my biggest dreams and hopes and goals in my life is to write a book. And that I can do in the time that I am doing my research-based job or doing something like a TED Talk. I don't know. I think there's like a million workshops that happen around the university that it keeps the job interesting.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to a conference soon.
Yes.
And that's in June, right?
Yes.
And it's just like something to look forward to.
Yeah. And you know? It's I think something that I find that I really enjoy about research is that, yes, it's a job, but it's also a job that is very much you're choosing it. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many other things people who are doing research could do. So like everyone in our lab, no one's forcing us to show up.
No.
You know, even this morning we had our book club. No one's forcing us to show up to that.
No, we're choosing
you know,
we to be
there. We all want to be there. Yeah. So even with conferences, it's I just love being able to talk to like-minded people who are also excited about whatever research they're doing, whether it overlaps with mine or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very motivating environment, I would say.
Yeah. And, oh, you know what? This is probably better to say during the flexible schedule time, but, like, if you're proactive with your time, you can be like Jess, who's currently
yes.
in Guatemala. She's just, like, spending an entire month off of school going and running in Guatemala and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, that's so cool. You know, yeah. I don't have to worry about taking vacation time because as long as I know that I can get things done, I can take that time off.
Yeah.
Well, I do run it past Sean. Though. Yeah.
But
like, for the
but
most
he
part,
says as long as you can get things done, you can take the time off.
Yeah. And like, yeah, the opportunities thing, it's really a big choose your own adventure. And you never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah. And you can really tailor your research career to like – what you like and what you want to get out of your experience as well.
Yeah, like if you're there and all you want to do is really just get the master's degree to help you pursue another degree, like a medicine degree, you can go in, do your thesis, leave, and be done. If you're going in and you're like, you know, I'm open to anything and everything.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things will come your way. So it's really quite cool and inspiring. And like really you can go and attend like anyone's PhD defense if you want to. Like if you just like are a curious
exposure therapy. Yeah. I can start doing that in prep.
Yeah. Like if you're just a curious individual and you're curious about the research that's going on that's unrelated to your field, there's like so many opportunities to get involved with it. So and yeah, just so many pluses about being a student in that regard.
So I think one that we both agree is gives us like a intrinsic value. Is that the right word? Intrinsic value?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Intrinsic value is the mentorship aspect. Mm-hmm. Both getting mentorship from those around us and Sean, obviously, as our supervisor, but also being able to give mentorship to honor students or volunteers in our lab and kind of help guide them and share our experiences.
Mm-hmm. I think this one's a really important one because at the end of the day, you know, I can choose to go into academia for the flexible lifestyle or for the opportunities that come my way, but really what I'm looking for is some sense of fulfillment.
Yeah.
And I think I get that from the mentoring, whether that's being a TA and helping mentor undergraduate students, which I've always found to be incredibly fulfilling. Like I could have the lowest energy day and go into teaching and leave it feeling very up and energetic.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
With the only exception of like if I think that my teaching session went really poorly, but, but like that doesn't often happen, especially if I'm teaching a class that I've already taught in the past. So it's, I always leave feeling so good afterwards. And then the other thing is, I don't know. I mean, maybe like on a psychology level, there's something nice about knowing that you're needed.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think like I think about it as obviously when we were both in our undergrads, like we just didn't happen to get here by chance. Mm-hmm. There we had a lot of mentors, mm-hmm. and now being able to kind of like full circle give back and be mm-hmm. able to like be TAs or be mentors in the lab. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. There's just something, you're right, like it's very fulfilling.
Yeah.
Just knowing that you're helping someone.
Yeah.
Whether that's deciding to go into research or not, you know?
Yeah. Like I want to say, I don't want to speak for Sean, but, you know, he always, you know, one of the big things that is emphasized about his lab is that he makes time to meet with all of his students every week for 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And I really think that adds to a lot of the, like, fulfilling part of his job.
Yeah.
Like, he says it over and over and over that it's, like, his best part of his weeks.
Yeah.
To just, like, sit down and chat with us. And for me, I get so much out of those meetings. And I think for him, he just, like, I think it really gives him a sense of purpose. It's like, why yeah. I'm here. I don't think he's in the job for grant applications.
No,
you know?
I'd be surprised if he said he was in the job for grant applications or review processes.
Yeah. And just yeah. like, I don't know. I think at the prospect of becoming a professor and knowing that you'll have a lot of students come and go and then go on to do great things.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so heartwarming.
And especially knowing that, you know, they might not be in the exact research field, but if you're doing your master's and PhD in a certain area, you're going to keep running into each other at conferences. So
yeah.
being able to keep connected and kind of see their journey as they go on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dr. Cozy, who was on, mentioned that one of her students in physiotherapy from years ago now works as the VP of, what is it?
Research.
Research, yeah. So, you know, they're definitely crossing paths.
Yeah, and in the book that we're reading this book called The Writing Workshop. And in this book, the author talks about having a friend who basically was feeling kind of down for not, you know, accomplishing as much as maybe some of her students had accomplished, like mm-hmm. feeling like she could have done more, basically. And then the student that she was referring to turned out to be Barack Obama.
Oh my gosh.
And you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
Also, yeah, I feel like that would be so fulfilling too, because you want the people that are under you is not the right word, but the people that you are mentoring, you want them to do greater than you because you're giving them your experiences.
Yeah.
So they should end up, you know,
accomplishing
a lot more,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's any good mentor's hopes that their mentees are excelling beyond.
Yeah, I do think that you're really correct in that. And I don't know. When I think back, I can definitely think of specific figures in my life who were big mentors who had a large impact on where I am today. And it's just like, you know, I love sending them emails, giving them updates yeah. on where I am and stuff. And I think it's a two-way street. Like, I gain a lot from the relationship, and so do they,
yeah.
or them. I don't know. My English is all over the place. But, yeah, I do think that's a huge plus to being in research. And I'm sure there's mentorship roles in any job.
Yes.
Like, if you become an elementary school teacher, you're still being a huge mentor. But there's, I don't know.
I think the difference with research is that early in our career, like in your master's, you
yeah.
have that mentorship role versus if you're going into an office place and mm-hmm. you're like a junior person in the office,
mm-hmm.
you really don't get that opportunity until
yeah.
you've built up your skill set.
Yeah. You know, speaking on that, one thing that we didn't write down but just came to my mind is in a traditional workspace, when you are hired on and you're the newest employee, you're the intern, and you haven't progressed in your career, one thing that you feel like is like there's some sort of hierarchy, you mm-hmm. know, in that job position. And I would say in research, I personally don't feel that as much.
I don't feel that at all.
And
really,
it's really like, you know, I look up to the PhD students in our lab as, you know.
Thank you, Julia.
I really do.
As you should.
It's like, you know, I hope to be you one day. But at the same time, I don't necessarily feel that we're not on like.
Same equal.
Yeah.
Even with Sean, like, you know, it's.
I think one thing that makes it feel like that is, you know, we can all go out for drinks and we can all like share personal experiences and laugh and together and everything, and it never feels like there's any sort of hierarchy.
No, yeah.
And I think the other thing is that we all do our independent work. I'm not working for you.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So we're working parallel to each other.
Exactly.
Instead of, yeah.
And we're all like kind of accomplishing goals together.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of teamwork involved, but it's never one person does work for another person who does work for another person.
And even when that, you know, if we have a, like right now, a summer student, we have Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, it's like, it's still parallel in a way.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I do really like that because I think one of the most important things is feeling comfortable in your workspace.
Yeah.
And I think as someone who has done quite a few entry level jobs, you know, it's hard to feel comfortable when you are definitely the lowest paid, lowest on the hierarchy.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to say it. And it's never the fault of a boss or anything. It's just the system that's built, you know?
Yeah. You feel like you don't have a voice versus, like, even when we have lab meetings, there could be a first year volunteer who says something. We're like, wow, we never thought of that. And, you know, and they feel completely fine and open because everyone's opinion is valuable in that space.
And I would say maybe it's okay if you're volunteering and you feel a little bit intimidated by the grad students. Like, don't feel bad about feeling like that. I think it's just a different level of understanding because there's different experiences for an undergrad versus a grad student. We should have made our disclaimer a bit earlier in this episode, but disclaimer, this is all based on personal experiences. These are reasons why we chose research, positives that we think are positives about research, but we are both in the same program, basically.
Yes,
we,
in the same lab.
We only have our experiences in our department, in our faculty, and at our institutions. So it could be completely different. And maybe some of our positives are negatives for you. So just keep that in the back of your mind while you listen to us talk about this. So the next kind of main positive for me, and something that does come up a lot, is I think research is a great way to just, like, I don't know how to kind of set this point up, but I'll just say the word, diversity.
Yes.
Basically, there's so much diversity in research in so many different ways. Whether it's the lab environment itself, there's diversity in thought, opinion, way of going about research, even in age, like life experience. As you can tell based on this podcast, everyone has their own unique path to research. They all have their unique interests and why they are there. But, you know, we're all brought together and because of a similar goal, similar research interests. And I think that's really cool. But then you get diversity from diverse, you know, methods. I think neuroscience is a really cool area of research because you can study it using so many different types of neuroimaging tools or pathology studies or behavioral studies to answer the same question. And you get a deeper understanding of the answer to a specific research question the more diverse methods you use, which I just think is so cool. And like for listeners who have a neuroscience background, for example, if you have a question and you can look at the behavioral results and you're going to be like, okay, maybe this is what's happening in the brain. And then you can look at EEG, which measures the electrical activity in the brain and gives you a really good understanding of timing of events, but not so good understanding of where things are happening. So you match EEG with behavioral and you're like, okay, now I think this is what's happening. And then you tag on fMRI, which has really good what we call spatial acuity, which is where things are happening in the brain, but not great timing. So you get the timing from the EEG, you get full picture from behavioral, and then you get specific, you know, where things are happening from fMRI, and then you tag on TMS on top of that, and you're like, but let's, you know, inhibit this
just in the brain. Just to double check.
You know, just to see what happens. And then now you've used four different methods, and you have a very big idea and understanding of what's actually happening, because now you have timing evidence, you have behavioral evidence, you have spatial evidence, and you have, I've disrupted this region and I've found something in line with my theories, or you know, one doesn't align with another and you have to create new theories. It's just so cool to use so many different methods.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that kind of goes into our next point about the creative thought that research gives you, is that you can approach a research question from so many different viewpoints and use so many, like a diverse set of techniques in order to answer the same question or to answer it based off of whether you're more behavioral neuroscience or, you know, it's really is amazing the tools that we have and that we can use. And I feel like we're very fortunate to be able to have access to that.
It's incredible. And one thing I really like about the lab that we're in is we don't focus our research around questions that you can come up with given the tools that we have. We get to come up with a question and then determine the tools that we need, which is not true for everyone. And it is definitely a privilege to be able to say that I want to address this question, and then our supervisor to be like, okay, let me see what I can do to help you answer this question. And speaking on that, is one thing that I learned probably in a psychology course is that, you know, you can be a senior researcher and then you have this one idea about how things work and you're so focused and narrow on this idea. But you need diversity to open you up to possible other solutions, right? Yeah. So that's why we bring on undergraduate students, master's students, PhD students to give a new perspective to something. And that's adding diversity as well, you know? And you can bring different cultures into things like understanding medicine, right? We could approach medicine just with a Western point of view, and we're not going to have the best, sorry, that was not a word, best method of care for an individual without considering culture into things. And that's why having healthcare workers from all types of backgrounds have input on what is the best way to take care of somebody. It's
very valuable.
So valuable, and it's so fascinating.
And it should be the standard, right?
It should be the standard. And you know what? You know, maybe Western medicine dominates the Western side of the world, but you know, we do have very good diversity and new perspectives. And I think there is a big movement to make sure that we are culturally sensitive to individuals who have certain practices and that their needs are met. And I think that's really cool. I think it's a physics example where it's like you have a physics teacher or professor who can't solve a problem because they're only viewing it from one lens. And then you have a younger, inexperienced physics student who has more creative thought because they're not, you know,
so like pigeonholed.
Exactly. And then they're able to work together to find a solution. And the student learns from the professor all the methods and the techniques that they've learned over the many years of their research. And the professor learns from the student to kind of get out of their narrow-mindedness approach to research.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's inevitable. Like, I think you and I, Teresa, if we end up being professors, say in motor imagery, because that's what we're studying right now, it'll be hard to convince us that our theories are incorrect, right?
Yeah.
At some point, but that's what we need. We need to be challenged.
Yes.
So, yeah, diversity and creative thought, like you said, that's just so cool. Do you have anything else to add on the creative thought?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah. I guess, like, one additional thing. I'm like not even breathing at this point. I need to like whew, take a breath. But for creative thought, I think it's really cool that I can just sit down and think of ideas and then just like bounce them off of other people in the lab and them show equal amounts of enthusiasm for these ideas. And we're getting like one step closer to creating a project together or something. Like, you don't really get that in a lot of other jobs, I don't think. You know, you can't just sit there and be like, maybe this is what we need to do to answer this question and just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we have to go through, like, ethics. We need to read the literature and everything. But you can really come up with some really creative designs for a research project and see it through.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true for a lot of other jobs. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it's really fun. So something more practical about really enjoying a research-based jobs is the student discounts.
Yes.
I think maybe going into a master's or PhD is slightly putting off actually having to be an adult.
And being in the real world.
Yeah. But there's something so nice about having student discounts at the grocery store or literally anywhere, to buying tickets to arts events, or I don't even know what's like, I think the most prominent for me right now is groceries.
I think, yeah. I think anyone can appreciate right now a grocery discount. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prolonging, because obviously you have your student card when you're an undergrad, but not that it should be the main reason that you go into a master's or PhD, but it is a nice benefit of prolonging that discount.
Yeah.
As grocery prices are rising.
Yeah. And access to a gym and access to a bus pass are like two great things that
And I even love. All the programming that the university has, like I know, Juliet, you're very involved in going to any of the like workshops that there are being put on. Like those are only offered to Dalhousie students.
So yes.
If we weren't Dalhousie students, we wouldn't be able to participate in these programs or the conference I'm going to in June. You know, you'd have to pay out of pocket for that. And that really is furthering your like career or your goals.
Yeah And we also get access to Loaded Ladle, which is I think daily free lunch that is done through just like a volunteer group, and it's like all vegan. I think, I don't know where they source their produce, but I know this similar equivalent at UVic did dumpster diving for their food.
So it's wow.
Like, you know that, like, you know, no food is going to waste, which is a really cool positive. I don't know if that's what they do here at Dalhousie, but having a free meal as students, that's great.
That's,
And then, you know, access to gear through Dell Outdoor Society.
Access to this podcast room.
Oh, yeah. For those who don't know, perks of being a student, I have access to CKDU's radio station, which is very, very cool. Yeah, there's so many different little perks. I don't know. I remember going to, like, the zoo, I guess, and having student discounts for that. I think it gives us access to a lot of things that would otherwise not be something that I would, I guess, pay money for.
Yes.
So, and then we also mentioned we don't pay taxes.
And it's not because we're evading our taxes.
It's because our, I guess, our scholarships are not
taxed. Non-taxable. So, so it's nice to not have that stress in February, March, when everyone else is stressing out about getting their taxes in and, you know, figuring that out. We're just
cruising.
We're cruising along.
Yeah. And I would like to say that the best programs out there in Canada are programs that will fund you as a student.
Oh, yeah.
Like the best grad programs. Like if you're currently searching for a master's position, if you're looking in an area that has no money, I would encourage you to keep looking.
Yeah.
Because there are labs out there that will openly accept you and also pay
Figure
you.
Figure out how to support you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that the work that any graduate student does is incredibly valuable for society, for themselves. Like, you are doing work that is important for the world, you know, and you should be paid for that. And I think at the end of the day, if you find good funding packages, you're basically getting paid what a taxable
yes.
person is being paid. I mean, we're not being paid a lawyer's salary, but you know, it is nice to have your research be funded, I suppose. Yes. A privilege, and definitely look for that
yes.
if it's within your capabilities. And I know that there's so many scholarships to apply to nowadays that hopefully you'll land one of those.
I would say another big thing is not just a sense of community in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
And I know obviously not all labs have that,
mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have a sense of community. We kind of touched on it about the opportunities with like meeting like-minded people and conferences and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think another big one for me is the community outreach that it brings.
Mm-hmm.
We in our lab, we do tours for promoting leadership in African Nova Scotians, where African Nova Scotian high school students will come in and tour the lab, and they tour like many labs and different programs. And it's just a great opportunity because I don't know about you, Juliet, but I had no idea what research was when I was in grade 10.
Oh.
Like, it'd be amazing to be able to see a research lab and do demos and feel like, wow, I could be doing this one day.
Yeah, no, I think that's really true. I don't know where I was in high school. I was working really hard. Don't get me wrong. I've been a nerd for my entire life. I love school. I even liked homework, you know? But I had no idea what, like,
and it's hard, like,
any
how
jobs
are you,
were,
how
you know?
Are you supposed to know what a job really entails, especially, like, if, for instance, Grey's Anatomy, like, that's not what, like, surgeons are doing all day. Like,
no.
Doctors do way more paperwork than any TV show has ever shown.
Yeah. Like, if anything, the only thing I really had exposure to was my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom. And so the only job I know inside and out is, I guess, being a mom. which is great. She did a fantastic job, by the way. I owe everything.
Shout out to Juliet's mom.
She's really
amazing
cool.
Artist, too.
Yes. One time we went to an open house and they had some of her art in the house, and I was like, my mom's famous.
Your mom reached your goal in life.
Exactly.
You're famous by proxy.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it makes me a bit sad that it's no longer a huge reality to become, like, for a job to be a mom.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's just with inflation. And
yeah.
I mean, I think it's super great that women are now in higher positions, and I think we're still fighting for, you know, some of our rights, making sure we have good maternity leave and pay and everything. But yeah. I do think things are getting a lot better. But I do wish sometimes that it wasn't so crazy nowadays to say, like, oh, what do you want to do? And it's like, oh, I want to be a mom.
Yeah.
You know?
Or even, like, I want to take the first 6 years of my kid's life off work.
Yeah.
And be a mom, raise them, you know, get them to school, and then, you know, start back up my career and not feel like I'm going to be pushed to the wayside.
Exactly. And I would say, given my experience, if I were to ever have kids, like, I would want to be a stay-at-home mom. I just think that I loved having my mom around all the time, and that's what I know. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I'm just saying that that would be a great reality, you know? So, anyways, I don't know how I got on this topic. What were
this
we talking
now
about?
A mom podcast.
Community outreach. I don't know. There's so many opportunities to do community outreach as a student. And I don't know, again, another thing that adds to the fulfillment of the job that we're doing. You know, some people really need a sense of purpose, and you can get that with research. And maybe you won't get that in your specific master's thesis work, but you can get it in other ways.
Definitely.
Like community outreach or like mentorship. And going back to your community comment, I just think it's so cool to be surrounded by like-minded individuals who are around the same age. Honestly, age doesn't really matter when it comes to academia, but I don't know. It's like we go out for lab beers, and it's different than how it would be if I was just at a typical job, you know, where you're like going out with your secretary.
Your coworkers. Yeah,
your coworkers. I mean, maybe with like the exception of Google, where they hire a bunch of young people. But I think at university, it's just such a great environment to make friends.
Yeah.
And it's like people that you want to hang out with outside of school.
Yeah, you don't feel the pressure because your coworkers or your boss is like, hey, we're going to do this, like, not mandatory, but you know it's secretly mandatory, get together at 4 p.m. and you stay for an hour and then you go home and you're like, oh, I didn't really want to do that, because you can only, you know, it's still in the confines of like a workplace and you still have that hierarchy versus, you know, our lab, we're all, as we said before, like we're all very much on the same playing field.
Mm-hmm.
We're like-minded individuals. We enjoy a lot of the same activities. And mm-hmm. Sean did a great job of like curating people who are just nice individuals yes. and like to have fun together.
Yeah. And I don't know. I've never experienced what a competitive research environment feels like. And so,
I don't think it'd feel good.
Yeah. So, like, I'm quite grateful for the environment that I have found. But, yeah, it's not true for everyone. You don't always get a great community in a research lab. Sometimes your supervisor is not actually a great person.
Yeah.
You know, it's not great to be found in those situations. So, again, if you're looking to start a master's program, look for funding.
Yes.
But also look to get to know the master's PhD students in that lab.
Yeah. Do a phone call with them before you commit to going to a lab. Mm-hmm. Ask them. I think a really like green flag with Sean is he always, any prospective student, he always gives them our emails and is like, please talk to my students and just like freely, openly talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know if you're a good fit for the lab or mm-hmm. not, you know. I feel like someone who would just want to do like, you know, like very singular by themselves research might not enjoy our lab because we're all quite
extroverted.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you're moving like across Canada or to a different country or just you're leaving home and you're leaving your support groups, personally, my advice to you would be choose a big lab to join, because if you're going somewhere and it's only going to be you and your principal investigator, chances are your principal investigator has a life outside of school. So choosing a lab where you can get to know the people in your lab and like spend time with them and meet their friends and, I don't know, get integrated to a new community and have a new support system is really really important.
Yeah.
Especially since, like you said, I mean, research can be really isolating.
Yes.
So the more people around, the better. That's always been true for me.
Yeah.
Some people are not as extroverted as I am. But yeah, I don't know. I think you can be introverted and still thrive in a big lab.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, if you find yourself in a position where maybe like you don't really jive with the people in your lab or it's a smaller lab, there's another pro of going into research and still being a student is that there are so many clubs and communities on campus that you can go and find people who are like-minded or enjoy the activities you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dal Outdoor Society, you can go if you really like being outdoors and everyone in your lab is like, no, we don't want to go outside with you. You can find people who are going to go outside and adventure. If you really like books, you can join a book club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many opportunities. So you don't have to just be – I don't want anyone to be defeated if they find themselves in a lab where – they're just not vibing with the other students.
It's hard to put yourself out there and it's hard to make friends. But I would say if you're going to start anywhere, I mean, I'm not putting down non-sporting activities, but hear me out. I think joining a sport is one of the best things that you can do.
Yeah.
Because you are committed to seeing the same people like multiple times a week for many weeks, for many months, you know? If you commit to yoga, for example. You know what? Yoga is a bad example. Let me say you've committed to Ultimate Frisbee. You know, you're going somewhere once or twice a week and you're going to see the same people and you're going to interact over an activity, and it's a great way to make friends. The only reason why I said yoga is not a good example is sometimes people use yoga for like their own time and space.
Yes.
So it might be a harder one to make friends through, but it depends on where you go, I suppose. But yeah, I think if you're struggling to meet new people, starting with a sport, and there's so many, another great thing about students is like they have access to intramurals, you know, and student discounts at most gyms. So yeah, I would start with a sport. I know my brother met a lot of his friends through doing volleyball. I don't know if it's beach volleyball. It's definitely some sort of volleyball. And I've met a lot of people here in Halifax through rock climbing. So yeah. Would strongly recommend.
Do anything that you like, you know?
Yeah, it could be pottery.
Anything that's accessible to you and that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and do it, and there'll be other people who are also doing it because they like it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it could even just be joining a walking group, you know? I'm sure there's a lot of walking groups out there.
Yeah, I feel like there probably is.
Yeah, or book club. Man, book clubs are so cool. I like them.
Yeah.
All right. And the last one that we have written down here is writing.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a bit of a strange one.
Yes.
No one really loves to write, you know, but I think one of the biggest positives of research is that you get to constantly work on writing. Like, writing is the main output of what you do. It's your thesis, applying for grants, it's
publications,
it's applying for jobs. It's probably one of the most important skills that you need to have as a researcher that maybe isn't so obvious. But one of the positives is that we're always writing and we're always producing content, and it's always our own stuff. And I don't know, we get better with it, we get better at our communication, we get better at saying what our point is, and as a result, I don't know, I think it just...
It's a very transferable skill, too, you know, whether you want to stay in research after a master's or not, like, writing is something that you can always get better at, like, even Sean says, you know, like, no one's going to ever be a perfect writer.
No.
And it's something that it's just nice and fulfilling to have a skill that, you know, isn't just specific to your job, but is specific to really a lot of things in life. And yeah.
I think it's just, there's something so validating about having an idea that you can translate into writing and having other people understand it is just so cool.
Yeah.
And you know, you can work on your writing and you can go on and write big things like a book.
Yes.
That's so cool, you know. And I don't think people give themselves enough credit for the publications that they get. At the end of the day, if you're a researcher, you're also an author, and that's so cool in my mind. And I know some people hate writing, but I think you have to find some sort of middle ground with it if you're going to be a researcher.
I feel like you have to at least tolerate writing if you want to go into research.
Yeah.
And hopefully you more than tolerate it, because it is a big aspect of it.
Yeah. And maybe not one that people think about. Maybe we can throw that in the negatives as well. Yeah. But I don't want to consider writing as a negative.
Yeah.
And you know what? A funny comment. I told my brother that we started this book club that's also a writing club, because the idea is to read a book about writing. and then it's to get together and write. Basically, right? And I was like, yeah, it's so important because we need to write as researchers. And he's like, well, I don't know, with ChatGPT, like, people don't really need to write anymore. And I was like, no, I disagree. Although he's in the AI world, you know, and I do think that ChatGPT will be integrated into academia, and it already is being integrated. And so things might change in the future. But for right now, writing is important.
Yes.
And you get to improve it, and you get to feel good about your improvements. It's really nice. It's just like a steady thing that will always get better with time.
Yeah.
So, all right. So do you want to do a bit of a conclusion for us, Teresa?
Sure. So we mentioned, of course, that we really enjoy having the flexible schedule. That kind of leads into the fact that, you know, we have a community that we built. So while we're not always in the lab doing things like writing and research, we can also enjoy the time with our fellow researchers doing things like rock climbing or getting some beverages.
Yeah.
And research gives us a lot of opportunity to really be involved in other people's lives, whether it's our fellow lab members or the community and mentors and mentees, and just a lot of learning opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I find a lot of skill building opportunities, whether that's writing or like interpersonal skills, intrapersonal skills.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes you just, we're just such well-rounded people over
here. What can we say?
I mean, not to compliment ourselves. Yeah. I'm joking.
You know, they say that if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
Yes.
And I would like to call that person out and say you're lying, because it does feel like we're working sometimes. However, I don't think I get the same amount of dread that other people get on Monday mornings when you have to go back to work. You know? Because I can choose when I want to go back to work.
You can always prolong the Monday.
Exactly. It's I love coming into the lab, and I love seeing people in the lab. If anything makes me upset, it's coming into an empty lab.
Yes. You know? I will say that's always a little sad. I'm like, I hope someone else is coming in today.
And just like you said, so many opportunities, student discounts, you know, community, diversity. It's just, these are all reasons why you should pursue research, or why I have chosen to, more accurately, why I've chosen to pursue research, and same as you, Teresa.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for chatting about this today with me. And next episode, we're going to talk about the negatives about maybe why you wouldn't want to pursue research. As much as we made it seem like a really fun and happy place, there are definitely some things to consider when choosing to choose an academic career path, I suppose. So we'll get into that next episode. Up next, Hudson's Hot Take of the Week.
I think you're gonna hate this one. The best way to enjoy a book is to listen to the audiobook version. For one, listening to an audiobook allows you to multitask while you read. You can listen while you drive, exercise, or do chores around the house. Audiobooks are also great for people who have difficulty concentrating, like me, while reading, as they can help you stay focused and engaged with the story. Finally, many audiobooks are narrated by professional voice actors or the authors themselves, which can add a whole new layer of richness and depth to the reading experience.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast, Mind the Gap. I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And this was recorded at CKDU.